Fixed income markets have evolved, but most benchmarks haven't. At Janus Henderson, our forward-thinking framework aims to reconstruct past approaches to fixed income by focusing on multiple investor objectives. Learn more at janushenderson.com. Investing involves risk, including the possible loss of principal and fluctuation of value.
This is your tech news briefing for Friday, October 22nd. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Snapchat is one of the most popular social media apps with teens. Its CEO, Evan Spiegel, says one reason it's been able to evade the controversy around kids and social media is because its platform didn't follow the lead of other companies.
When we were first building Snapchat, we talked about the pressure that people feel to look pretty and perfect on social media, how that actually constrains people's ability to express themselves.
Our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern, spoke with Spiegel at the Wall Street Journal's Tech Live conference this week. On today's show, we'll have highlights from their conversation. That's after these headlines. Facebook's oversight board said the company hadn't been forthcoming about how it exempts high-profile users from its rules, using a system known internally as CrossCheck. In a report released on Thursday, the board said it's drafting recommendations for how to overhaul the system. The report follows a Wall Street Journal investigation. It revealed Facebook used a separate set of rules when deciding whether to take action against a post from high-profile users. The oversight board was created by Facebook to provide guidance about the company's enforcement systems and make binding decisions about enforcement action. The board said Facebook failed to mention CrossCheck when it asked the board to review its decision to ban former President Donald Trump from the platform. It said the company's lack of disclosure meant the board's recommendation last spring was insufficient. We report exclusively that the criminal organization believed to be behind the ransomware attack that shut down Colonial Pipeline has set up a fake company to recruit tech workers. Researchers at Microsoft and the intelligence firm Recorded Future said the well-known hacking group called Fin7 had set up a professional-looking website for a fake company that claims to sell cybersecurity. The website lists jobs that would be performed at any security company, including programmers and system administrators. Security researchers say the attempt to impersonate a legitimate company for recruiting purposes is a worrying sign that the threat of ransomware attacks is growing. After years of back and forth, WeWork finally went public on Thursday through a deal with a special purpose acquisition company, or SPAC. Shares in the co-working space rose 13% from its listing price on its first day of trading. WeWork put its plans for an initial public offering on hold in 2019 after questions were raised about its founder, the company's valuation, and its plans for the future. Our reporter Elliot Brown says the internal upheaval at WeWork hasn't had a major impact on the way other tech companies go public.
There was a lot of introspection in venture capital and startups, and people thought maybe we should sort of do things different and give founders less control. That's really gone away. So I think WeWork right now is a bit of the exception. They have a much more kind of down-to-earth valuation that's based on real estate rather than sort of the promise of some murky visionary tech future. Other startups are certainly basing their valuations today on sort of years and years and years in the future.
And shares of Snap plunged in after-hours trading on Thursday following the company's earnings report. Snap reported a 57% increase in revenue in the third quarter, but it predicted that revenue growth could slow next quarter. Snap blamed the drop on changes that Apple made to its App Store privacy settings. The company said the new rules make it harder for online advertisers to test and measure the success of campaigns, which Snap said had caused advertisers to pull back. Snap shares fell from $75 to $57 in the hour following the market's close. Speaking of Snap, the company's CEO shared his thoughts on regulation, augmented reality, and keeping kids safe online with the WSJ's senior personal tech columnist earlier this week. We'll have that conversation after the break.
Don't miss the limited episode podcast series, Sustainably Speaking, featuring trailblazing leaders discussing how to improve sustainability and address climate change through innovation. Join Joshua Baca from America's Plastic Makers for these vital discussions with policymakers, academics, and industry pioneers about partnerships and policies that support advancements to meet this urgent challenge. Subscribe today, wherever you listen to podcasts.
At the Wall Street Journal's Tech Live conference this week, the impact of social media on children and teens was a big topic. One tech boss who knows a lot about that is Evan Spiegel, CEO of Snap. He spoke with our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern, about how Snapchat thinks about young user safety, the role of regulation on social media platforms, and his thoughts on the metaverse. Here are highlights from that conversation, starting with Joanna.
Evan, thank you for joining us in this LA studio. I know you had to come very far.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here and great to be in Los Angeles as well.
Yeah. So there's been a lot said in the last couple of weeks around the research that Facebook and Instagram has done around teenagers. I'm hoping you brought your top secret research. We can just take a look at that. No?
The Wall Street Journal does seem to be very good at digging that up. So,
does Snapchat do this kind of research?
We do a ton of research, and we ask our community how Snapchat makes them feel. For example, I think, you know, in 2019, 95% of Snapchatters said that Snapchat made them feel happy, which is more than any other service that we studied. We also try to understand things like mental health, of course. And one of the things that we find really interesting about mental health in particular is that relationships with close friends and family, and actually communication with close friends and family, is critical to mental health and well-being, and actually is the number one predictor of your ability to withstand a depressive event.
Piper Sandler had said in their Taking Stock of Teen report that Snap ranked as teenagers' favorite social media app. And so you're saying makes them feel happy. But on the other hand, it feels like Snapchat has evaded some of the controversy that the other social media apps have. Do you think those things kind of go hand in hand?
When we were first building Snapchat, we talked about the pressure that people feel to look pretty and perfect on social media, how that actually constrains people's ability to express themselves, and how using the camera to communicate visually, and of course with no likes and comments and things like that, and only with the friends that you select and you want to talk to, could be a totally different experience. And that's really what we saw. We were able to differentiate and build something that I think made people feel free and happy expressing themselves and connecting with their close friends.
Instagram for kids. On pause now. Snapchat for kids, is that something?
That just has not been a focus of ours. We see plenty of opportunity to innovate with, you know, the audience that we have, with people who are above the age of 13 and allowed to use Snapchat, and so that'll continue to be a focus. Allow our two-year-old to play around with our lenses the other day at home, but that was heavily supervised. That was his first experience using augmented reality.
Right. Like, and I think that's a lot of the argument for Instagram for Kids, right? Which is that they know kids are using this. They want to create a sort of safer space. How do you guys deal with that? You know about, I mean, you hope, I'm sure, that people under 13 are not using the app, but I'm sure they are.
Well, fundamentally, Snapchat has to be safe for everyone that uses it, no matter what age they are. Right. And that's why we've designed our service so that, you know, when you sign up for Snapchat, by default, you don't have a public profile at all, regardless of your age. You have to opt in to adding any of the friends that you want to communicate with. We never market our service to people under the age of 13. And of course, we also work, you know, to try to make new features so that parents can feel comfortable and really use Snapchat together with their children. So one of the things that we've been focused on lately is building new family, essentially. We haven't yet announced the name of this product yet, but we basically have a family center so that young people and their parents can use Snapchat together, so parents have more visibility into, you know, who their friends are talking to on Snapchat, their privacy settings, and things like that.
There's been a lot more talk about regulation, especially around kids. Is that something you fear? Is it something you embrace?
I think the important point to make is that, you know, regulation is not a substitute for moral responsibility, because regulation just happens far too late. So I think regulation certainly may be necessary in some of these areas. But again, unless businesses are proactively, you know, promoting the health and well-being of their community, regulators are always going to be playing catch up.
You've said before Snapchat is not a social media company. It's a camera company. Do you still call Snapchat a camera company? I guess fill in the blank. Snapchat's
a camera company. And that's really because the camera is where we see the long-term opportunity for our business. You know, if you go back to 10 years ago, people were only using their cameras to document and save important moments, right? And Bobby, who I started the business with, had this key insight. You know, if people are using their camera 10 times a day to talk, right, instead of once a week or once a month, just to save something important to them, that we could build a really big business. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, on top of that engagement, right, people using their camera to communicate, we've also been able to build a really big AR platform.
What's your reaction to the metaverse?
That's not at all a focus for us at Snap. We're really interested in augmented reality because it is grounded in the world that we share. And actually, I think it does a better job of integrating computing into the world than the way we're currently using computing today, right? Whether that's behind your desktop, you know, sitting hunched over a keyboard or looking at this tiny little screen, you know, on your smartphone. Augmented reality really has the capacity to bring computing into the world and to make it shared, of course, with this physical foundation that is so familiar.
So on augmented reality, you currently have in the product lenses, which really, and I was playing around with it last night here in LA, I mean, you're creating, if you don't want to call it the metaverse, but you are creating this hidden virtual world, right, around us. These places where we can go and discover more information on your maps, the lenses being located in different areas. Where does that go, moving Snapchat from not a social media company, but into what other kind of company?
One of the most exciting areas that we've been investing in recently is around commerce and try-on of new products, you know, apparel, accessories, beauty products, things like that. And that's really exciting because not only is that experience way better than the physical world, you know, actually like taking off your clothes in a dressing room or whatever and trying on all sorts of other clothes. In a virtual environment, it's also substantially better than just browsing photos of, you know, models wearing these clothes. And then what we tried to do was then work to combine that with fit and size data. So not only can you now, you know, visualize what a new outfit looks like before you buy it, but we can also help you find the right fit and size, which reduces returns overall for merchants.
Now you've more recently introduced Spotlight. Feels a little bit like a TikTok area of the app. How has that played in to the strategy and also growth?
People make something like 5 billion snaps a day on average, right? So tons and tons of these amazing snaps. And what we found was that a lot of them were going viral on other platforms, including TikTok, but also, you know, YouTube or, you know, Facebook platforms, things like that. So we found that people were making these amazing snaps that they really wanted a bigger audience for them. Because when you make something that's really funny or really cool, you want to share it with as many people as possible. And we never offered a way to do that on Snapchat. There was no way to go viral. And that was intentional because we were really worried that if we created a way for anyone to share anything with a huge audience, that it could be misused. What we learned then from looking at all these different platforms and, you know, then a lot of our own work internally to, you know, build all sorts of, you know, automated moderation systems, but also then to be able to scale human moderation systems, is that we could offer with Spotlight a way for people to submit their best snaps, for those snaps to go through automated and human moderation before they reach a big audience, but then that the most successful and most entertaining snaps could reach a really big audience on Snapchat.
So that's really interesting, and I'm not sure I knew that from the back end. So somebody's uploads something to Spotlight, I want this to go, gets reviewed through AI. If then it starts to hit more and more people, then it gets flagged, a human moderator watches it and decides yay or nay.
Exactly, if it's appropriate. And the general idea being, like, if content's going to be broadcast on our platform, that's really different than sharing it with a couple friends or even, you know, maybe talking about something at a house party where there are 50 people or whatever. I think there's a, you know, general expectation of privacy to some degree in that situation. But as soon as content's being broadcast and reaching a larger audience, you know, not just something shared with your friends, we have a much higher standard of responsibility to make sure that that content that's being distributed lives up to our content guidelines.
Well, Evan, thank you so much for joining us here today.
And that wraps up our Tech Live special series this week on Tech News Briefing. Special thanks to the WSJ Live team, including Kim Last, Catherine Finnerty, and Anna Friedel. And thank you to our guest hosts, Matt Murray, Deepa Seetharaman, Ryan Knudsen, and Joanna Stern. Our producer is Julie Chang, our supervising producer is Chris Zinsley, our executive producer is Kateri Yoakum, and I'm your host, Zoe Thomas. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them with commentary from experts. Visit adoptuskids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families and the Ad Council.